What they're contemplating doing next is heartless. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is my co-host, Vice Chairman, good friend, fellow analyst, and all-around great guy, Chuck Michaels.
And it's good to be with you today, Barry. I think it's pretty important that we discuss this topic. This is a pretty important one, and it says a lot about what's going on in the Ohio legislature.
It says a lot about what's going on in our culture in general as well. But you're right. I think, ladies and gentlemen, if you can stick with us today, we're going to try to get through a couple of items, but that's just going to depend on how in-depth we think we need to go with this. The first item that I want to bring to your attention is something that, unless you really haven't been paying attention a lot, you know what's going on. There's been an issue that's been brought before the Ohio legislature, and it's one we've talked about on this program in the past, called the Heartbeat Bill. That's House Bill 125. It was a bill that would prohibit abortions once a fetal heartbeat is detected in the unborn child. This seems like a simple enough proposition, but as a friend of mine has been quoted as saying, did you think that saving babies was going to be easy? Unfortunately, that sentiment was right. You see, the Heartbeat Bill, which started out earlier in 2011, at the beginning of the year, passed the Ohio House of Representatives by a vote of 54-44. It was then sent to the Ohio Senate, where it languished for about 5 months before Senate President Tom Niehaus, who's from the Claremont County area in the state, finally decided to send it to a committee. The first hearing in that committee was on Wednesday, ironically enough, on the 70th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Now, I say ironically enough because just as a sneak attack was perpetrated upon Americans by our enemies, so also was a sneak attack perpetrated in a committee room in relation to the Heartbeat Bill on that Wednesday. But I don't want to, I'll share that with you just a little bit later. We need to unpack this a little bit first. The bill, as I said, would do basically three things. Number one, it would require a physician, and I use that term fairly loosely when we're talking about an abortion provider, but it would require the physician to test for the presence of a fetal heartbeat in the unborn child when a woman presents herself for an abortion. The second thing it would do is that the doctor would have to medically notate and inform the woman of the presence or lack thereof of a heartbeat in the developing child. The third thing it would do, and this is the most important part, and the part I think that is raising the most contention, the bill would prohibit that physician or any other person from taking the life of that unborn child should that fetal heartbeat be detected by using standard medical practice, which we found out from hearing is usually some kind of a Doppler system of ultrasound that can pick up that fetal heartbeat as early as 4 to 6 weeks after in gestation, after conception. Now, Chuck, as you know, talked about this before, that this bill's drawn fire from both ends of the pro-life spectrum. The end that says it's got to all be done right now, totally, and anything less is compromised. And the other end of the spectrum that says we can't do anything more than the courts will allow us, and to do anything more is unconstitutional. However, the Heartbeat Bill, I believe, and I think you understand this as well, Chuck, it kind of splits the difference. It actually goes a little farther than the courts have specifically pronounced, but it doesn't quite go all the way to a total ban on abortions from the moment of conception. In other words, it doesn't discuss or deal with the whole idea of, you know, when does life begin, as far as, you know, if it's at conception or if it's a point just beyond that when you have cell multiplication. It doesn't get into the whole idea of embryology and things of that nature, but it does get into the idea that once you detect a heartbeat, that the heartbeat is an indicator of life, and therefore it's the most reliable indicator, and we've heard this from medical professionals, it is the most reliable indicator of the potential of carrying an unborn child to full term. That once you pick up a detectable heartbeat, it's, as they say, somewhat smooth sailing from there. That you can, if that baby's heart's beating and is beating around the time that it's supposed to be beating, you can pretty well assure yourself that, you know, barring the presence of any kind of a genetic abnormality in the child, you're probably going to get to full-term birth unless something intervenes, i.e. an abortionist intervening or some other complication. The bill, again, I don't think it's not the be-all and end-all that we, that all of us in the pro-life movement, I'm sure our listeners, would like to see, because, you know, we're working to end abortion. But we're working to end it in such a way that we are being, as the scriptures say, wise as serpents, but innocent as doves.
I think all of us, if we are truly pro-life, would admit that we want to see a bill that will end it. As we record this, it is 9:23 on a Thursday night, and I think we'd all like to see it end by 9:24 on Thursday night.
Exactly.
The fact is, in our current cultural situation, in our current understanding of the voting populace, that's simply not possible at this moment. I understand the zeal of the radicals. What I don't understand is the maneuvering by the people who claim, and I'm speaking of Ohio Right to Life, who claim that they're for protection from conception, who basically don't want to set the abortion availability clock back to the earliest possible moment, and that would be a detectable heartbeat. Why are they expending so much time, effort, treasure, basically almost committing political suicide, because that's what's going on inside Ohio Right to Life at the moment, to fight a bill that will get them much closer to the goal than anything else out there except perhaps personhood? And that brings up another question, which I'll get into after I finish this part of the rant. I can discern no reason for them to be in opposition to this bill, other than the fact that, and this is going to be controversial, and if people don't like it, that's too bad. But the fact is, there are a lot of people who are making a lot of money being professional pro-lifers. And this was what seems like this is about. Keep raising money, keep doing the fighting, and make sure that we all have jobs at the end of this year and the end of next year and the end of the next maybe 50 or 75 or 90 years. Again, I realize that's controversial, but that's certainly what it looks like. The other part of this rant is, we all know the saying that politics makes strange bedfellows, and it seems like the personhood people are palling up to Ohio Right to Life because they are trading one another's talking points in opposition to the heartbeat bill. But unfortunately, the personhood people, who don't seem to be very discerning, unfortunately, if they manage to defeat this bill, they're going to find themselves on the outside looking in with the rug yanked out from under their feet by Ohio Right to Life, because Ohio Right to Life simply is not in the same book with the personhood amendment people. Anybody who believes that they are is deluded.
What I want to talk about, ladies and gentlemen, I want to give you a little taste of what happened in committee. First of all, this committee, the Senate Health, Human Services, and Aging Committee, is chaired by Senator Scott Olslager of the Canton area, who has been a member of the Ohio General Assembly for 30 years. Now, he has been both a representative and a senator more than once. Started as a rep, then as a senator, then as a senator, then as a rep. He's gone back and forth between the two chambers for 30 years. The chairman held the hearing on this bill on Wednesday, and it started at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, the hearings went until after 5 p.m. with no breaks whatsoever. So over 4 full hours of testimony was given on this bill. There were about a dozen people who came and testified in support, because this was supposed to be a hearing. The sponsor of the bill, Representative Lynn Watchman from Napoleon up in Northwest Ohio, who has also been in the legislature nearly as long. I think he's been there about 27 years, and back and forth between the House and the Senate, brought this bill forward, and he came and gave his sponsor testimony, where he said that the reason why he actually got engaged in politics and why he ran and why he continues to be in the legislature is to end abortion. That is his reason for being there. That is why he's introduced the heartbeat bill. Now, his testimony was pretty compelling, and he got hit pretty hard by one of the Democrat members, Senator Shirley Smith from Cleveland, who's an African-American woman, who seemed to take great offense that any group might have been involved in influencing Representative Watchman's decision, almost insinuating that he was in the pocket of a special interest. However, her line of questioning and asking, what is the membership of these organizations, and are they diverse, and how do they get their money? And you know, just those type of things really showed how just venomous that particular senator is against the pro-life, against unborn children, which is a shame when you look at the statistics and the data and you realize that abortion in America was started, the abortion movement, Planned Parenthood, was started by Margaret Sanger back in the 1920s and 30s with the specific intent through the eugenics movement of eradicating the African-American demographic. They wanted to kill off African-American babies.
Well, it wasn't just African-Americans either. It was Asians. It was certain kinds of Southern Europeans. And in fact, Adolf Hitler loved Margaret Sanger. Don't want to get too much into that kind of thing, but the facts are facts. Adolf Hitler got a lot of his eugenic ideas by reading Margaret Sanger. The fact is that Margaret Sanger was a flaming racist who wanted to recruit the black community in order to kill off the black community.
And it seems like the beat still goes on because at least from Senator Smith, who represents a large minority district in Cleveland, you would think that she would have enough wisdom to understand her own history of her own people and understand that it's abortion that's the attack on African Americans, not the pro-life movement.
Well, I think somebody's done a statistic, and it's been a while since I read it, but isn't there a grossly over-large percentage of abortions that are performed that are African-American abortions?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it's considered the modern genocide of the African-American community, to the point where there are numerous African-American pro-life groups, and some of which who have come out and endorsed the heartbeat bill because they understand the historic significance of moving the line this far and ending virtually every abortion without ever having to try to go against Roe versus Wade and its prohibition against an outright ban.
Yeah, well, for instance, isn't Dr. Alveda King is a very, very prominent pro-life advocate, and that's Dr. Martin Luther King's mm-hmm. niece, if I'm not mistaken. And I know she and I are Facebook friends. That doesn't mean we chat very at all. I do pay attention to what she's doing. It's a sad fact that, unfortunately, many African-American families just don't. They're told, as I had repeated to me once by a person of African-American descent that I used to work with. He came in one day and made the rather silly blanket statement that there were minority rights in Roe v. Wade. And I said, okay, what are they specifically? Of course, he could come up with nothing. This is something he had been told, and he thought that this was some kind of an argument stopper. And I asked him this specific question, and he just frankly couldn't think of anything. This seems to be the mindset, unfortunately. Now, obviously, it's not across the board because, I mean, Dr. King, you and I both know people who are in the pro-life movement who are of all different kinds of extractions and philosophies and religious beliefs. You know, we even know atheists who are pro-life from a philosophically pragmatic standpoint. So this idea is, frankly, it's just strange to me.
No, and I can understand it. And I looked up those numbers as you were speaking. Although African Americans in the United States represent 12% of the population, they account for 35% of all the abortions performed in this country. Over 13 million African American babies have been slaughtered since Roe versus Wade in 1973. That's a third, over a third of all the abortions in the United States are committed upon the African American community. But yet, a senator representing her community and worried about the diversity of a pro-life group should also be worrying about the associations she's making with pro-death groups whose historic goal and purpose was to eradicate her entire ethnic community. It's just shocking. But that's the kind of mentality that we have, and you expect that from the left, Chuck. But what you don't expect are some of the attacks coming from those people who are purportedly pro-life. And ladies and gentlemen, we had quite a bit of that during the testimony. The testimony that the proponents gave after Representative Watchman gave his sponsor testimony were impressive. Professor David Forte, who's a constitutional law professor who's served in pro-life work for 30-plus years. He's a Catholic, has been involved as an advisor to two different popes on the pro-life issue, pro-life legal scholar, and he's also one of the gentlemen who helped draft the legislation known as the Heartbeat Bill. And he testified to its unique approach and its way of going at the issue without running afoul of the current court's understandings in relation to abortion. And his testimony, the questions he got came from some of the Republican members, especially one, Senator Peggy Lehner from Dayton, who was the former state president of Dayton Right to Life, and who spent her entire time of questioning trying to dig at her professor to try to say that, well, you know, this protection's unconstitutional, and if we only had informed consent, we'd be much better off. Now, for those of you who don't know some of the terminology, informed consent is the position that you basically, when the woman comes in for an abortion, you give her the information, and you even give her the information that, okay, that heart's beating, but then she can choose to go ahead and kill the baby anyway, which, Chuck, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it seems like that kind of defeats the purpose.
This is one of the things that makes the Heartbeat Bill vastly different. In fact, 180 degrees out of phase with other so-called pro-life legislation. And that is that, for instance, if you'll remember the 3D ultrasound bills, you have to show a mother a 3D ultrasound. But the bottom line was you show her the 3D ultrasound and then she can kill the baby.
Right. And let's be honest about it, Chuck. Now, I got to thinking about this after the testimony. There were folks who came up. There was an obstetrician who came up, and there was also someone who did ultrasound technology for one of the crisis pregnancy centers in our state. And this same senator, Senator Lehner, kept asking questions, trying to dig at why it wouldn't be informed consent wouldn't be better. And what she was trying to get at, she asked the tech from the crisis pregnancy center, well, how many women, once you tell them and you show them the ultrasound, choose to go ahead and abort keep their babies? And of course, she said 98% of the women that they talk to do that. Well, of course, the senator was using that to try to build her case for why we can get rid of the legal protections in the bill and just go with informed consent because, oh, it'll save all the babies. But the point is, Chuck, that's called cherry picking.
That's right.
The point is, women who come into crisis pregnancy centers, which are usually Christian-oriented, which are there to try to help protect both women and babies, who offer adoption alternatives, support for the pregnant mother, even clothing and supplies for the babies. And I'm on the board of a crisis pregnancy center and have been, and of another group that deals with these issues. They are trying to meet the needs of these women who come in these crisis pregnancies. So of course, when a woman knows that she's being cared for and there's compassion, and that people are caring enough to try to provide for her and for her child that she's now finding herself pregnant with, there's a higher likelihood that she's going to keep the baby and at least bring it to term for adoption, if not keep the baby herself. But in an abortion clinic, that's not the same MO. That abortionist is there for one thing only, and that's show me the money. So it is not in their best interest to give a woman full information, even if they're legally required to do so. It's not in their best interest to because they're not going to come at it from compassion. They're not going to come at it from the idea that we're here to try to help you, and we want to try to meet your needs. And oh, if you decide to have the baby, then we can direct you to resources to help you, you know, with whatever you need, with clothing or with assistance, et cetera. They're just there for one thing only. Let me give this information to you and then talk to you into going ahead and having the abortion, because they don't make money if the woman turns around and chooses to leave and protect her baby. So when you hear all these numbers that, well, informed consent, you know, 78% of the children are saved. Well, that's not necessarily true. If we divided it up between the two, yes, crisis pregnancy centers would have a huge percentage of babies who are not being aborted. But the key is, Chuck, and the reason why you need legal protection is crisis pregnancy centers aren't performing abortions to start with. It's right. The abortionists that we are regulating, not the entire industry, including crisis pregnancy centers. The women who go into an abortion clinic are wanting to kill their babies. The women who go into a crisis pregnancy center, that's still in doubt.
This is one of those black lies, white lies, and statistics arguments.
Yes, it is.
And honestly, Peggy Lehner knows better. She's being disingenuous. This is, again, she's tugging at the heartstrings rather than appealing to logic. And that should not shock us because Ohio Right to Life does that all the time. She learned her lesson well while she was the president of the Dayton area, Ohio Right to Life. Let me give you an illustrative story. This won't take very long.
No, please.
This is someone close to me who got pregnant in her early 20s and went to an abortion clinic. Should have known better, but went to an abortion clinic. And they made the mistake. They made two mistakes. First of all, they told her she was further along than she was in order to squeeze her for more money. Said she was past the deadline in which they could do it for, you know, X number of hundred, and so it was going to cost $100 more. Why am I not shocked at that? And secondly, they mistake this person complained, and the nurse left the room to go say she's not going to pay any more money than that. This person got into her file that was on a desk and saw an ultrasound and saw the baby that was inside her. And as soon as the nurse came back, she said, "Never mind, I'm leaving," and left and had the child and gave it up for adoption. Now, what does it illustrate? The fact that A, abortionists are ruthless. They're in it for the money. They will do anything to squeeze as much money out of you as they can. And when they find out they've reached the limit, they'll take what you'll give them. So this illustrates the point that these people do not deal in truth. They deal in death.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the key point is that, yes, we would like to see that the woman has to be notified. That's part of the bill. But the genius of the heartbeat bill is not just informing some woman, but it's saying, okay, if that child's heart is detectable, it's a living person and a heartbeat. And we had the obstetricians who were there testifying in committee that, yes, if there's a heartbeat present that we can detect, that is the strongest indicator that baby can go to full term. In other words, it is the strongest indicator. And it's one of the basic indicators of life, you know? If you don't have a heartbeat, you don't get brain waves, but you can have lower brainwave function with a heartbeat. So, you know, it's the whole situation of which is the most important, because that became part of the argument. But again, we went on and on and on, and person after person, from post-abortive women to medical professionals, to even Dr. Jack Wilkie, who is the grandfather of the pro-life movement, who started both Ohio Right to Life and the National Right to Life Society, as well as the International Right to Life Society, who has lectured in over 85 countries across the face of this planet, whose book, Handbook on Abortion, has sold tens of millions of copies. The man who, probably better than anybody else, and who's been in it longer than anybody else around, trying to protect unborn babies, he not only stood up and testified in favor of the bill, he also testified as the reason why he resigned from the board of Ohio Right to Life and helped form a new organization called Ohio Pro-Life Action. And he basically said, because the Ohio Right to Life Society wasn't serious about ending abortion. Now, I'm paraphrasing his quote, but that's what it really got down to. So, again, the big bombshell, though, Chuck, wasn't in that testimony, because after the proponents got done, it was time for the quote-unquote interested parties. Now, to show you how disingenuous people are, every one of the interested parties who got up on the bill were not interested in saying, oh, well, you know, if we had this or added this little piece here, or if we change this word around, it'd be a better bill. That's usually what interested parties are about. Every person who got up, all four or five of them, all testified how bad the bill was and how much we should, that they're wasting their time. And one testified, well, you know, you're going to waste taxpayer dollars worrying about this stuff. And again, and this is where I think it's ironic that this hearing was held on the 70th anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor, because the state legislative director for Ohio Right to Life Society, who says that their mission and goal is the protection of innocent life from conception to natural death, stood up and said that the only way their organization would support a bill is if the legal protections for the baby were removed and it was only an informed consent piece. Stunning to all the pro-lifers in this room. Now, Chuck, this hearing room holds about 100 people. It's a pretty good-sized hearing room in the Ohio Senate. I would say probably at least 85% of the people in the room were wearing hoods or wearing red or in some form of show of support for this bill. You had a few folks from the pro-choice community wearing blue T-shirts, things of that nature, but there was probably only a handful of them, maybe no more than about 8 or 10 people. The rest of the room was filled with supporters. You could have heard a pin drop when this legislative director said that. I think that many of the pro-lifers in the room were absolutely stunned to hear coming out of the mouth of what's purportedly Ohio's premier pro-life organization saying, we can't support it if it actually protects babies.
And that's why I'm really dumbfounded over this very odd partnership between the proponents of personhood and Ohio Right to Life. Because let's face it, Barry, you and I both know that Ohio Right to Life, what they should be asking Ohio Right to Life to do right now, if you're serious about this conception to natural death thing, then you need to pledge right now to help us push for personhood.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see a public statement of Ohio Right to Life committing their time, effort, and resources to help with the ballot initiative on personhood.
Well, that's right. And that's also a way that Ohio Right to Life could reestablish their reputation as being truly pro-life, because, frankly, if you're pushing to make a bill that will stop abortion at a heartbeat into an informed consent bill, which means you have to prove that the baby has a heartbeat and then you can kill it, the only way to do that would be to come out and make a public statement, not some kind of a backdoor handshake that we're behind you all the way. You know, it's like officers in Vietnam. Don't worry, boys, we're behind you all the way.
Right.
And that's exactly where they'll be. They'll be bringing up the rear. And in fact, what they'll probably be doing is helping the enemy call in mortar strikes, as they have been on the heartbeat bill. We're not going to see any sudden outpouring of support for the personhood amendment from Ohio Right to Life. It's just not going to happen.
If it does, I'd be the first to say bravo. But
absolutely.
Just as I've said before, I've said this publicly as well. You know, at the end of the day, when the heartbeat bill passes with its legal protections intact, the protections for the unborn children to be legally protected from being butchered in the womb, regardless of whether the mother wants to consent or not, but the point is that once that baby's got a detectable heartbeat, you can't kill it. That's what this bill's all about. Once that bill is passed and it's going to the governor for signing, there's usually what's called a signing ceremony on big bills, where the governor comes and you know, people have seen this before in pictures, and you've got the legislators gathered around and maybe some of the folks that were the genesis for the bill. Honestly, Charles, what I'd like to see is not just the team who's been coming in there, the attorneys and the obstetricians and the activists and some of the groups. I'd really like to see Ohio Right to Life's folks at that signing table when the most protective pro-life piece of legislation in America is signed into law. But I'll tell you what, we may not get to that day if that group, Ohio Right to Life, continues with the suicidal strategy that it's taking in trying to rip away the legal protections for defenseless unborn children and still allow the abortionists to convince women to terminate those precious babies when they could have done more. See, that's the whole point. If they're successful, and they've already got a couple of people on that committee convinced, we know it. We know from the questioning on Wednesday that Senator Lehner, that is her goal, is to take away the legal protections and only make it an informed consent bill. And I'll be the first one to come out and say it publicly. She is actively, she's saying she's pro-life, but she's actively working to strip legal protections for unborn babies. Now, they can claim that it's constitutional, unconstitutional, all they want. Not a single one of them, not a single one of us either, know how a court is going to look at this when it finally gets there. We don't even know what the court's going to look like because it could take 4 to 5 years for a bill of this nature to work its way through the legal system and get to the United States Supreme Court. But get there, it will. We know it. Oh. I mean, we've already had lawsuits threatened. Yes, that's right. This week, the American Civil Liberties Union came out, and we talked about this on an earlier program this week, came out and threatened a lawsuit based upon the Ohio Healthcare Freedom Amendment that's just passed in Ohio to try to keep the heartbeat bill from becoming law. That's how desperate the left is, because they know this issue. As Dr. Wilkie said, they are running in fear right now because you can't argue against a heartbeat. And honestly, he's right. We know he's right. They know he's right. I think the courts are ultimately going to know he's right. Now, the question is, why can't Ohio Right to Life and their leadership, their executive director and their board, understand that he's right?
Well, let me ask you a question. And you and I have talked about this before, but this is sort of, we need to reiterate this from time to time to our listeners so they get it sort of in their brain and unable to get it out. What was the rationale behind Roe v. Wade for why abortion was allowed?
That's a good question. Why was it, Chuck?
Because we don't know when life begins, and we don't know whether or not the fetus is a person.
Exactly. However, we now have moved almost 40 years. And with the advance of technology and with the advance of medical science, we now know unequivocally that that unborn child in the womb is a person. We know that they are separate from the mother. We know that that child, once it has a detectable heartbeat, has 95% likelihood of coming to full-term birth. We know these things because of the advance in medical technology. I mean, just think about it. We now have four-color, full-color Doppler ultrasounds that you basically not only can see the baby and hear the heartbeat, you can actually like put it in color and see how the blood's flowing through the baby's body.
Well, let me give you a little illustration too. My degree is in biochemistry, and I have some training in embryology. I can tell you that in 1973, as disingenuous as the Roe v. Wade decision was, in 1973, we understood scientifically that a fetus was a separate human being from the time of conception, because we know for a fact that when sperm meets egg and the 23 singlets come together and form 23 pairs of chromosomes, at that point, you have a separate human being. It may have only one cell, but the fact is, it is a separate person. Personhood does not depend on personality. It doesn't depend on even a heartbeat. It doesn't depend on brain waves. It doesn't depend on a full development. Otherwise, I know people hate slippery slope arguments, but the fact is there are people who would, on the basis of Roe v. Wade, would argue that people who are mentally deficient, are born physically defective, those kinds of things, are not persons because they're not perfect in some way. Well, guess what, folks? Nobody's perfect in some way. We all were born with some kind of damage. I just saw a special on Bruce Jenner the other day, who was a decathlete, won the 1976 gold medal in decathlon. And the fact is, he admits right up front, am I perfect? No. He goes, I'm dyslexic. I can't read. I can hardly read. He says, I was a terrible student, but I was a great athlete. Well, guess what? He's a person, even though he's born defective in some way.
Yeah.
So this idea that somehow we can determine personhood on degree of perfection, on whether there's a heartbeat or not, you know, whether there's a detectable heartbeat or not, whether there's detectable brain waves, the baby's going to be born without a leg, it'll have a tail, you know, all these strange defects that can happen. That's a human being and a human person from the time it's a single cell. Embryologists know for a fact that that single cell with a human genome can't become anything else.
Right.
There is no other creature on earth that embryo can become. And we can argue the old Hegel drawings. Look, I can tell you, I went to college at a major university with a very respected biochemistry program. And I had a biology textbook that had Hegel's drawings in them. Hegel's drawings were, in fact, repudiated and exposed as a fraud in 1910. And yet in the mid-1980s, I could still look at a textbook and see Hegel's drawings. And from that, people were inferring that it's an old and, again, a repudiated idea that, forgive the scientific phraseology, but ontology recapitulates
phylogeny.
You got it right. And that is a repudiated viewpoint. No one believes that. Human beings do not pass through the different phases of, you know, we don't become amphibians and then, you know, birds and things. We become human beings, and we're human beings from the start to the finish. And everybody knows that who's scientific, and some of them keep their mouth shut because they want to keep their positions in universities protected, because if you came out on that basis and argued in favor of pro-life because the arguments are specious, you're very likely to lose your job.
Yeah, that's true. Much of that's still the same today, though. It's
2011, and we're still arguing about Hegel's drawings 100 years after having been exposed as a fraud.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's what gets down to, you know, we're sitting here now, and because people can't see common sense clearly, and they're always afraid to buck what the status quo is, and specifically with the courts. Well, if the court says it, then that's as far as we can ever go. Well, Chuck, if that was the case, if you think about it, especially dealing in this area of life, then Supreme Court decisions that in history wouldn't have been overturned, such as Dred Scott, which basically said that African Americans were property and not people. But we know better than that, and our understanding is much better than that, and that's the reason why you go back again and again. And just like with the unjust ruler and the widow kept coming back and back and back, pleading her case to that unjust judge, till finally that judge gave her what she desired. He changed his mind. And we've heard from the attorneys in relation to this that the courts will never change their position unless they're invited to, because they can't. I mean, if they don't get a case before them that asks them to reconsider certain rulings, they don't reconsider the rulings. But if they get a case that comes and challenges the status quo or the doctrine of stare decisis, then they're forced to think through it again. Now, we know that at some times they may come up with a decision that changes the status quo, and sometimes it reinforces the status quo. But as the constitutional law professor who testified on Wednesday said, with this bill, it's all positive. If they don't change their mind, we've lost nothing. If they do change their mind, we've made history.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why this specious argument that we're taking the chance on reaffirming Roe versus Wade. Every time I hear that, I laugh. I'm like, I tell people who try that on me, please understand that every time an abortion is performed, Roe versus Wade is reaffirmed.
As a matter of fact, yes, it is.
So, again, we just have to put an end to some of these just unbelievably specious arguments, and that's one of them. We get them all the time. They become rote. People quote them because they're supposed to be argument stoppers, and in fact, they stop nothing. All they do is basically paint the person who uses them as someone who isn't thinking originally.
Oh, that's true.
And there's not, unfortunately, in the Ohio Right to Life talking points, there is not a whole lot of original thinking in there. There's a lot of cliche. There's a lot of bad arguments. And unfortunately, what they know for a fact that they can count on the news media jumping in and saying to themselves, hey, this is a man bites dog story, because Ohio Right to Life is coming out as opposed to a, and of course they claim they're not opposed, but they are.
I was just about to get to that. Is the most disingenuous part of this whole effort is that from the beginning of this bill, their lobbying team, including their executive director, has lobbied and cajoled and tried to talk people off of being co-sponsors on this bill. The various legislators have done everything they could do to try to derail this bill, but then come out and say, well, no, we're neutral on the bill. Well, Chuck, to me, neutrality means, okay, yeah, if you ask me about the bill, I'll say, yeah, I know about it, but you know, we're not taking a position on it, and we're not really actively engaging on it. There's been quite a bit of active engagement from them, and it's all been in the sense of trying to stop the bill from moving forward and becoming law. And honestly, you know what? I guess I'm going to have to agree with you. It was something you said earlier about the reason why a group that's purportedly there to protect, legally protect unborn babies would be opposing the bill that would do the most to do so. And I'm thinking that it's got to be about what I call mission creep, where the institution becomes more important than the mission. The idea of ending abortion becomes unthinkable, because then what would we do with our organization? What would we do for a career? Honestly, Chuck, I don't know about you, but I don't think it's a great idea to have a 100-year plan to end abortion. I think we need a 100-second plan, because if you can't discuss it in about a minute and a half and come up with a way to end this legally, you're not really serious about doing it.
Well, that's right. And frankly, what's going on here is what those of us in the alternative medicine field have called for years the March of Dimes syndrome. There are other groups out there that we won't go into that, but the fact is the March of Dimes put itself out of business by coming up with a vaccine that ended the disease. So now the March of Dimes is still around, but it doesn't raise anything like the money it used to. And now, of course, I think they raise money for birth defects, something along that line. But and that's a noble effort. But the fact is the March of Dimes is a shadow of its former self. And Ohio Right to Life doesn't want that. They don't want to stand on the victory mountain and disband itself or turn itself into a fraction of its size, with the sole purpose of maintaining the victory. They're all about fighting the fight, which means raising the money and getting the troops in there and keeping them excited, so that legislative directors and state directors can all keep their $100,000 plus a year salaries.
Yeah, and you know what, Chuck, you're right. And ladies and gentlemen, that's my understanding as well. Is it isn't just corporate CEOs who tend to make a lot of more money than would seem to be logical. it also happens in the nonprofit environment.
Boy, doesn't it? Off the mark, but if you'll remember the big scandal with a fellow named Arimony about 15 years ago, who was the United Appeal or United Way. Didn't he make something like $3.5 million a year? And it wasn't enough. And in fact, I think he was embezzling, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, and that may be a part of it, but you know, to go back around.
Not to say that anybody there isn't. I'm not making that accusation at all.
No. But the point to go back around to is, ladies and gentlemen, right now the heartbeat bill is at a crossroads. We know almost without a doubt that there's an effort afoot by some of the senators, the majority senators, Republican senators who purportedly call themselves pro-life, to strip the legal protection portion of the bill out, make it informed consent only, and then pass it out and then publicly go out and say that they passed a heartbeat bill. Because that's Ohio Right to Life strategy. They made an announcement over the late summer that they had come up and they were working with states around the country on a heartbeat informed consent law. Now, I believed then that they were going to introduce a separate piece of legislation to compete with the heartbeat bill. But now I understand that it's even more nefarious than that. They're going to take the time, the effort, the resources, the blood, the sweat, and the tears that many people in the state, and probably a lot of people in our listening audience, have put into supporting the most protective piece of legislation in the nation for unborn babies, and tear the heart out of it in order to make that bill their compromise bill. And they've got senators lined up to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time. Make the phone calls. We will put on our website, or you can contact us by email, and we will send you the phone numbers for every one of the Republican members of the Ohio Senate Health, Human Services, and Aging Committee. The chairman is Scott Olslager from Canton. The vice chairman is Dave Burke from Marysville. And Dave, actually, I believe, is a very strong proponent. He voted for the heartbeat bill twice in the House. He was appointed over the summer to the Senate seat, but he voted twice strongly to support the heartbeat bill, so we appreciate him. Shannon Jones from Warren County is on that committee and is uncommittal. She says, well, I'm supportive and I'm pro-life, but she hasn't committed to the bill specifically. Senator Peggy Lehner from Dayton, who we believe is going to be the architect of the radical surgery to remove the heart of the heartbeat bill. We also have Senator Chris Jordan from Delaware near this area, who has been vocally supportive of the bill, and also Troy Balderson from Zanesville. And Troy was another transplant from the House over the summer because of the seat that came open, and he also voted twice in favor of the heartbeat bill. So right now our main concern is to focus on Senator Olslager, Senator Lehner, Senator Jones. Those are the three key people on that committee that we need to convince not to do this nefarious thing. Do not take out the legal protections for unborn innocent babies. To do so is a betrayal of everything that the pro-life movement has been working for since Roe versus Wade passed. To come this close to having the most protective piece of legislation in the country, a piece that a dozen states are waiting on Ohio to pass and to get it into the right form so that they can take it and run with it and get it passed quickly in their states, and to strip that out because certain groups can't see us winning the battle. Ladies and gentlemen, that's almost criminal. You know, and it's certainly not a pro-life position. So if these people come out and campaign that they're all pro-life, we will make sure that you remember who voted for what. Those who stood for life are going to get support. Those who betrayed unborn innocent babies are going to be exposed. That's all there is to it. But we need your help in order to bring that critical mass so that they know that not passing this bill or tearing the heart out of it and passing it as a shadow of itself, as an informed consent bill only, isn't acceptable to the Ohio public.
Yeah, basically, if the guts are ripped out of it, it becomes yet another symbol. And it becomes yet another place where somebody can say, look at this giant victory that we won. Please send us money. Fact is, I think your scenario of Planned Parent or of Ohio Right to Life.
I know it's hard not to differentiate those two the way they're acting right now.
Well, to be fair, they really are different. But the fact is, at this point, there are two people that the press are going to when they want to quote against Heartbeat. You're not seeing all that much from Planned Parenthood on this because Ohio Right to Life is carrying the water on negative quotes on the Heartbeat bill. The fact is they don't have to go to Planned Parenthood to get negative quotes. All they have to go into is go to the supposedly neutral on the bill, Ohio Right to Life. And my gosh, how many quotes did you say somebody came up with? They counted?
I think
from the time
this was back when it was in the House, and actually this was the sponsor of the bill, Representative Lynn Wachman, who had finally had enough of the game playing and the opposition, and he had his staff do research, and I guess they Googled up Ohio Right to Life in opposition to Heartbeat Bill, and they had over 2,600 hits of articles that referenced opposition comments from the executive director of Ohio Right to Life.
Now, to be fair, those are probably a lot of repeats.
Oh,
in
sure,
there.
Sure, sure. But still, is to have it be that many returns, that means
right.
That it was far and wide that they were saying things that could be construed as outright opposition to the bill.
Yeah, exactly. And therein lies the rub. Now, I bet if you did, this is speculation on my part. I'm not going to tell you I've done this. But if you went out and did the same thing with Planned Parenthood, you're probably going to find maybe an equal number, maybe a lower number. Because, for instance, I know today I was listening on a local radio station, a local rather large coverage radio station, and they did a story on the Heartbeat Bill, and their big thing, of course, was a man bites dog type headline. But they did interview Jack Welke, and honestly, they used probably the most speculative part of his I'm sure his quote, and it had to do with whether Anthony Kennedy was going to vote for the bill when it got to the Supreme Court or not. But the other person was Planned Parenthood, and Planned Parenthood's argument was so specious. It's hard to believe that the Ohio legislature, we've now witnessed the Ohio legislature telling women they don't have the brains to make their own medical decisions. Well, of course, this is not about making a medical decision. It's only about making, if this were simply a procedure to remove a tumor, we would not be talking in these terms. But the fact is, it's a procedure to kill a separate living human being. And therein lies the cultural divide. Planned Parenthood and the proponents will not admit that that is a human life worthy with dignity and worthy of all the medical treatment that we can do to save its life. And apparently Ohio Right to Life isn't willing to go along with that either. And that's what's amazing. And unfortunately, the personhood people who should be for anything that stops the abortion process are aligned with
yes.
Ohio Right to Life.
That's right.
On this issue. It's just stunning to me.
Well, it's stunning to everybody who is serious about being in the pro-life movement and who's serious about ending the scourge of abortion and the shedding of blood upon our land in that manner, that any group that started, number one, especially the group formed by Dr. Jack Welke, and who for 40 years has been supposedly at the forefront of leading the charge to end abortion, now that you're on the cusp of it, you back away. And not only do you back away, you go run screaming in the other direction, pulling people along with you to keep them from crossing the bridge. It's absolutely phenomenally just breathtaking. But you know what? God does have a plan for everything. And all things do work together for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And so we must understand that God has moved miraculously on this particular bill to protect it and move it forward, because there are many times in the House where this bill could have fallen apart. Things could have happened to it. It would have died in committee. It could have died on the floor, but yet it was kept alive. It could have been bottled up still by the Senate president and killed by never sent to being sent to a committee, but it's now in a committee. Now it's threatened with being killed by having its heart ripped out by senators who are not following a pro-life ethic. And we just have to pray, first and foremost, that God would protect it, and so that there could be truth, that the babies whose hearts are detectable could be saved. And then that way we can move the bar that much farther till the day we can save them all by getting to personhood. Because once you've determined that, yes, the state's interest to protect the child when its heart's beating, it also should be the state's interest to protect the child when it's created. That's the day we want to see. But we want to get there a lot faster than some other groups seem to want to go.
Well, yeah. And again, not to be too repetitive, but you have to ask yourself why any group would not be for stopping abortion at the earliest possible date. Why? And there's only one answer that you can come up with, and it's money. And that's sad.
Yeah, but you know what, ladies and gentlemen, we'll keep reporting to you on this, because the bill is probably going to be marked up for hearings this coming week. This time it'll be opponents, so those who are actually willing to step forward and honestly admit their opponents get to testify during this next hearing. I'm sure that probably some other folks who may be part of the Ohio Right to Life group might still come in and testify. Maybe they'll be intellectually honest enough to actually say they're opponents. But however, we know with prayer and a lot of work and a lot of effort on your part by making the phone calls, this bill can get passed. It can go to the governor. It can be signed, and we can start the process where we're going to save over 26,000 unborn babies per year in Ohio alone. That's over 70 a day. Chuck, when I sat in that hearing room, I counted the chairs in rows. There were 10 rows of 7 chairs apiece, and then the room was filled with people standing. But there were 70 chairs in that room, and my thought occurred to myself, if we don't end this now, every day this room gets emptied out with another round of kids being killed. It's time to stop it.
It's time. It's past time to stop it.
And I guess with that, it's also probably past time to stop the program, because we've spent an hour. And
yep.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for listening. Join us on weekdays at 5:30 for our 15-minute Principles and Policies program. And be back with us again next Saturday at noon for more Principles and Policies. This is Barry Sheets, Executive Director.
And please call your representatives.
Absolutely. And Chuck Michaelis, our Vice Chairman, signing off for today. God bless and have a great Sabbath.
And now, a constitutional moment from the Institute on the Constitution's Michael Perutka.
With elections just around the corner, many folks are angry and even frightened when they see that the vast majority of those they keep electing to positions of public trust are folks that just can't be trusted at all. So what do we do, and how should we vote? Whether we're talking about dog catcher or governor, it seems to me that just like the Marines, we are looking for a few good men. Let's start with the word good. The word good derives from the word God. To be good is to be godly. What do we want this good man to do? Simply put, we want him to obey his oath of office and to protect and defend the Constitution of these United States and the state of Maryland. What is required for him to do this? Well, if he's going to obey his oath of office, I guess that first he needs to know what an oath is, right? Secondly, he needs to be very familiar with the content of the constitutions he has sworn to uphold. If he has never read or cannot articulate the principles contained therein, then I guess he can't do the job, right? Perhaps you could begin by asking a candidate for an office in Maryland if he has read the Maryland Constitution. Maybe you could ask what the Maryland Constitution says about eminent domain or the function of jurors. Now, if his eyes glaze over or he changes the subject, you will know that he is not very qualified right away. But this begs another question, doesn't it? If you don't know the answer to these simple questions, you may be easily distracted by some vague promise or mushy political rhetoric that he hands you. My point is that you won't get a better public official than you are a citizen. This is Michael Anthony Peruca for Institute on the Constitution, bringing you the American View.